Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
What I like about any art is just sort of like when it opens up into some sort of portal where it's not necessarily telling you what to think or spelling things out for you, but just opening your mind into a space where you then can explore your own being. And that's sort of the meta new age description of it. But, you know, I feel like by the act of seeing somebody get enraptured in art or a piece of art that was birthed out of an honest intention, I think that inspires indirectly anyone who comes in contact with it.
Welcome to the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Travis Book. This episode is brought to you by Thompson Guitars, makers of fine instruments, handmade with love, in Sisters, Oregon. The podcast is presented by Americana Vibes and the Bluegrass Situation, and our show is part of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network. You can dive into all things roots music anytime at thebluegrasssituation.com. Chris Jacobs is an enigma. The question is always, why is this guy not more famous? Searing guitar, incredible heartfelt songwriting, genre-defying vocals, and an incredibly positive vibe and outlook. There's really none better than Chris Jacobs. I asked him to come to Western North Carolina to do a couple shows, and it just so happened we shared the stage the weekend prior at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. So I was lucky to get to spend a lot of time with Chris over the course of a week. I really enjoyed the music in the interview, and I'm looking forward to more music with him in the future. This podcast is an edited distillation of the full-length Happy Hour, which aired live on June 22nd of 2022.
Live from the Gray Eagle in Asheville, the Pearl of Carolina, is the Travis Book Happy Hour! With special guest, Chris Jacobs. The House Happy Hour House Band featuring Devin Neal on the drums. And now your host, Travis Book. Hi, good evening. Welcome to the Happy Hour. Usually my good friend Bill comes and MCs, but it's busy in the summer, and he's out working. He's got a better-paying gig tonight. So I am my own announcer tonight. It's just like it was back in the old days. Yeah, welcome to Happy Hour. Tonight we've got the incredible Chris Jacobs here from Baltimore. Yeah. I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I'm part of a growing contingent who cannot understand why Chris is not rich and famous. He's a tremendous musician, a great singer-songwriter, incredibly kind and generous. I first met him on Jam Cruise a few years ago, and I was immediately drawn to his incredibly good vibes. I hit him up on Instagram a few months ago and was thrilled when our calendars aligned and he figured out he could make this happen tonight. We had a killer gig last night in Brevard, and I'm looking forward to playing again this evening. A couple weeks ago, I was in California, and I was at a festival. I was talking with someone who'd seen a lot of these shows. There's a few people who watched a lot of these, particularly during the pandemic. And she was reminding me that early on I talked a lot about the challenges I was facing trying to keep like an open heart and an open mind in the face of so much negativity and divisive rhetoric. And while the content and the context of all this stuff changes, the challenge continues, as they say. Currently, the topic is gun control and what to do about all these mass shootings. And it's really, if nothing else, it's just really disheartening. And solutions seem really hard to come by. How do we preserve individual liberty while keeping public spaces safe? And there's no obvious solution, at least not to me. I'm not an expert, but it doesn't seem like, as a people, like we're really even like willing to try some things. And it's just more like thoughts and prayers and red herrings, like mental health funding. But I think the important thing is just to not give up hope and to not forget. It's easy, you know, you get sort of desensitized. It happens every day. And I think we just need to continue to keep our minds and our hearts open and try to continue to love, because, you know, as Martin Luther King said, you know, hate can't drive out hate. Only love can do that. So that's my hope for tonight. Now I'll play a song. And then I'll say a couple more things, and then we'll get Chris Jacobs out here. Why we worry, tell me, why we cry and tell me, can we live together without pain? Burdens at our doorstep, burdens in our heart, it's time to let them travel, lay them down. From the tallest mountain down in the lowest valley, we're all asking and we want to know. Why we're climbing, tell me, why we're falling, tell me, where we're going, yeah, we want to know. Right. Sunrise. Rise, sun. Rise, sun. There's a new day coming, and it's not promised, but it's all we know. Can we quantify it? Can we try and name it? Try to fight it while we hold it close, right? Devin Neal on the drums. I met Devin yesterday.
Hi.
Maybe like a few hours before the gig. And he's cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're a hip cat, man.
Wow.
Incredibly useful. This may not be your last time here, although the gig's not over yet.
Say.
Hey, I got more things I want to talk about. I hope that's okay. It won't take long. You know, I just got back from the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and it was the 49th edition of the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. It was I've been there like 13 times, including when I was 2 years old and my parents took me back in 1983. And I was just there for the day. I almost made it through Willie Nelson, but then I had a meltdown. My dad loves to remind me of that. But it was my 10th time playing there, and I feel so grateful to be part of it. It's kind of like the home of Newgrass or Jamgrass or new acoustic music. The lineup was really great. They had Tenacious D. That's right. Dick jokes for days. Phil and Friends, Tyler Childers, as well as the usual suspects like Sam Bush and the Punch Brothers and Green Sky Bluegrass. The weather was typical mountain weather with some like blazing hot days in the sun mixed with some summer rains and cool nights. I got to see some good friends, and I played under the lights with my String Duster brothers, which was very, very nice. My girlfriend Corey and I, we climbed Mount Sneffels on the way to the festival and soaked in Orvis Hot Springs on our way out. It was like a really perfect and iconic weekend. It just had all the elements. It was so, the reason I tell you is because it was just so good to be back at that festival, seeing friends and doing the normal stuff in the birthplace of the music that I love so much and that I've dedicated my life to. And it reminded me how beautiful this community is, and I just wanted to say that I'm like forever grateful to Craig Ferguson and the entire Planet Bluegrass family for the opportunity to play in that valley. I'll be back next year for the 50th, whether they ask me to be there or not. So big hand to those folks and the kind of work they put in. The other reason I tell you about it is because it, as I tune down, I think a lot of us spent the last, a lot of us have spent a lot of time feeling isolated. And alone, and now that, you know, we're back from the pandemic times, or like, in like phase three of the pandemic, I don't even know what the hell's going on anymore, but it's not like it was. You know, we can all be together, and it's, God, it feels really good to be together. A couple months ago, these very good friends of mine, my best friend, TC, and his friend David, they helped make a music video for this song. And they had to hear this song about 1,000 times in 2 days. You can hear them laughing. They're like, oh, he's going to do it again, isn't he? But I'm going to play this song anyway. Song I wrote during the pandemic. On Instagram, actually, while I was trying desperately to stay connected and not lose my mind. Am I the only one here breathing? Am I the only one awake? Is my the only heart that's beating? The choir almost more than I can take. I have painted all these walls, still they haunt me. I have waited for so long, still I'm wanting at night. Wander through my memory of what seemed like only passing through, but still it's only just a reimagining of that was written long ago. I am lying here in bed, should be sleeping. I am listening instead, get the feeling that I'm not. I'm not. just the sum of all my wondering. Will I see the beauty in the years? Can I peel away the layers along? I learn to live with all my fears. I have painted all these walls, trimmed to ceiling. I have waited for so long, still the feeling that I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I'm not alone. I'm not alone.
Chris Jacobs is here. I have some questions I'm going to ask him. Man, thank you so much
for making
the trip and taking the time.
I'm so glad we finally were able to do this.
You played a lot of music. We'll get to that. Give us a little context. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland.
I was gonna say I was gonna ask why did you end up in Baltimore? But that answers
my
question.
Because I was born there. Yeah.
Did you ever leave?
Went away to college and. Came back and it's home. Always has been. It's always felt like home. Got family there and Baltimore's great. Gets a bad rap out there, but it's a great town.
Well, you're definitely helping elevate its reputation.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Me and the Wire, I guess.
How did you get started playing music, making music?
You know, I my parents were huge music fans, Deadheads, and. Listen to good stuff in the house. I, of course, hated the Grateful Dead till I was a teenager. And, around that time, I saw a friend playing a guitar once, and I just thought it looked so fun and looked so cool. And I'd always loved music, but never really took it seriously. So I guess I was about 15, and I asked for some guitar lessons, and then went to my first Grateful Dead show and said, yeah, I think I want to do this.
Yeah.
That was it.
So, with parents being Deadheads, do Deadheads go to church? Did you grow up in the church at all?
No, I'm Jewish.
Oh. All right.
So, no.
Still?
Well, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm overly religious, but I grew up totally normal suburban childhood, you know. We talked about this. I got nothing dramatic to report to the PR people.
Yeah, we were having breakfast this morning and talking about how we're both kind of stricken with the musical misfortune of coming from, decent upbringings, decent homes and never struggling with, drug addiction or anything that would be like really newsworthy or make our stories particularly compelling. We're just like really like friendly, middle-aged white dudes.
Yeah,
you know.
Isn't this an interesting program, by the way? I mean, it doesn't get much edgier than this.
Yeah. So like,
How do you like?
So how do you wax your beard? I mean, like, where do we go from here? But we just do our best. You know, you can't be anything other than you are, what you are. And that's something else that we kind of arrived at, is that you just kind of have to just continue to do what you do. And you know, if you make music and it means something to you, then hopefully it'll mean something to somebody else.
That's it.
Well, your music means a lot to me.
Thank you.
When did you write your first song? When did you start writing music?
I think I dabbled in writing songs before anybody saw them. You know, I think I was in college. And, you know, writing sappy songs that I think I was the only one that ever heard.
Were any of them any good?
No, obviously, like, no, but they were, you know, I wouldn't ever play them for anybody if I could even remember them. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And
Yeah,
so I just started doing it. And then after college, I soon formed the band The Bridge with my good buddy Kenny Liner, and that's really when I started writing songs, taking it seriously, and really trying to keep doing it.
And do you write a lot? Do you write every day?
I don't write every day. I wish I was one of those people that wrote every day.
Like some people would be like, "Yeah, I'm writing right now."
Yeah, like I you know, I've gotten into those modes. You know, I've done that, and you know, different things work for different people. Usually these days it's more like, okay, I need to write some songs, and it's like a whole frame of mind that needs to shift for me, which is why people say to write every day, so you're just in it all the time. But it's good for me to step away from it too, and you know, writing songs can be emotionally torturous for me, you know, just digging into that world and critiquing yourself and everything. So I need to be prepared, and I need to be in the mode where, you know, usually a deadline helps, and where it's like, okay, I got to write some songs. What shit is going on in my head right now? Let's get it out. And, you know, that's sort of how it goes. Yeah.
Do you ever write with other people?
I have. I back in the Bridge days, Kenny and I collaborated on some stuff, and then it's mostly by myself. But I did a record with Ivan Neville, and that was probably the most co-writing relationship that I have. And we continue to over the pandemic, we were passing some stuff back and forth over text and collaborating on lyrics and stuff, and so that was really fun. So yeah, he's one of my few writing partners now, and I. Other than that, I'd like to do it more. I think it's a hard thing to find the right partner for that. You know, I know there's guys in Nashville that like sit in a room and have like, you know, 8 different writing appointments booked throughout the day. And maybe if I was in that zone, I would do that. But yeah, to me, it just, you know, you open yourself up so much, and you're so vulnerable. It takes a special kind of vibe between two people to be able to pull it off, I think.
Yeah, well, I was going to pitch you some song ideas, but I don't know if I'm going
to. No, let's do it. Yeah. I would love to do that with you. I would love to be doing it more. There's always, I've several friends, Paul Hoffman from Green Sky, we talk about it, and like, you know, I'd just love to do it more. It's, you know, it's, I think, just finding the time to sit down and do it, you know.
Yep. I read in one of the things I do to prepare for these, I read other interviews, you know, of yours. And I found out some interesting shit, actually.
Oh, yeah?
But
well, there is some interesting stuff. That's good.
I read an interview where you were asked about your guitar influences. And the first ones you list are Tony Rice, Doc Watson, Clarence White, Jerry Garcia. These are all bluegrass musicians.
Mm. Yeah.
Including Jerry, by the way.
Yeah.
So you're into bluegrass.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I caught the bluegrass bug pretty heavy. Like when I was early on, probably 2 years into playing guitar, I discovered Tony Rice. And that just like blew my mind. And he to this day is my favorite acoustic guitar player of all time. And I even started playing banjo for a few months, put the guitar down. I was all in, man.
Yeah, I think most of us go through that.
Yeah.
Through that banjo phase.
Right.
Where you're like, you think it's going to be a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I remember walking, I was in college. when I was in that phase. It's a good time for it.
Yeah, that's when mine was.
It's a good time for a lot of phases.
It's a good time for a lot of things, yeah. Experimental.
And I remember, like, walking to class and, like, working on my forward roll.
Oh, you were that guy, huh?
Oh, yeah. And, like, walking into class with a friggin' banjo, you know, and then realizing, like, I was like, what? I had that moment where I'm like, what was I thinking, you know? Like, our dobro player, Andy Hall, talks about in his college phase. One day he was working for Greenpeace and he was living in Boston. And this isn't a banjo related thing, but he realized he got on the city bus and he realized he had sandals, a full dashiki, and the only thing he was carrying was a macrame pouch with a bowl and weed in it. Like, that's all he left the house with to go to work. And he was like, wow, I'm that
it's
guy.
Like a dream, yeah.
You know? Like, I'm that guy.
Yeah.
We all have those moments where you're like, oh man, I've really done it this time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was the guy for a little while that sat like in the stairwell of the dorm just clanging banjo for hours. So
all by yourself.
Yeah.
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 Let me just ask you a couple more questions and then we'll play some more music or play some music together. You played with so many people. It's like almost kind of borderline absurd. I mean, you've played a lot of music with a lot of people. We talk a little bit about that, like about collaborating, what that means to you.
Yeah. No, I've been lucky to mix it up a lot. I mean, I just did some gigs with Green Sky Bluegrass. I've sat in with the infamous String Dusters, which is a huge honor. And
it's nice of you to say.
I go down to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, and I have lots of friends down there that invite me to come sit in. And you know, it's the biggest honor you could have as a musician, and I pride myself on, you know, I've never tried to pigeonhole one particular genre, you know, of guitar playing, songwriting, and so it's nice to know that I can just drop into any situation and people trust me to just play, serve the music, and that's what I kind of have always taken pride in rather than being like a guy who can like impress everyone. It's more somebody who knows how to serve anything that he's playing. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. On that note, why don't we play some music?
Let's do it.
Why don't we do our service?
Let's do it
through the music.
Speaking of, I mean, Travis Book and Devin Neal, they just learned my songs this week, and you'll hear talk about serving the music. It's an honor to play with these gentlemen.
Peace and let shine. Be it hell.
Yes. How about it for these guys, man? This is the portion where Travis is having me play a few by myself. And I might have had a different plan, but you know, I was moved by your monologue at the beginning of the program today. And just, you know, Travis Book is a righteous dude and one of those kind of people who isn't afraid to speak his mind and use whatever platform he may find himself to try to do good and speak some truth. So I appreciate that about you, buddy. And yeah, you can give him a hand for that. You know, because there's a lot of people out there that maybe don't want to hear that when they come to see a show.
You can plug me in because I don't have a...
Oh, you need this.
A DI, yeah.
You know, I try to keep it, like, non-confrontational, you know? I'm not, like, trying to cause any problems.
Of course not.
To walk out.
No, of course.
I'm so not hopefully in the walkout business.
So, I mean, I'm going to do this song. Hopefully nobody walks out, you know? But, you know...
It's all right. I'll keep track, and I'll deduct it from your pay.
Yeah. I've been told to shut up and sing on occasion. But, you know, so I decided to just write a song instead that I think speaks a lot of things that were on my mind. This is a style of music called a talking blues, kind of inspired by Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan. Anyway... I decided to speak my mind about some things that were important to me. So I wrote a talking blues song about it. So I'll present to you the talking NRA blues. See, back in 1871, when the Civil War was good and done, a couple of Union generals, Burnside was one, were still kind of bummed about something. See, it was nice and all to win the war, but the truth was his marksmen had been pretty horrible, using a gun called the smooth bore, and all of them weren't known to be too efficient. They were kind of lacking in precision. It was kind of an issue that needed fixing. In fact, their accuracy was so pathetic, about 1 in 1,000 was the number they said, that a shot that was fired actually made someone dead. No way to run a real country. So to try to save America from humiliation and to keep up with the rest of the developed nations, they formed the National Rifle Association under the time of the actual assumption. It'd be a sports club for hunting and gun instruction. And not for nothing, but back then they even wanted control of them. See, they viewed the right from which it was based in the frontier survival of the early days, when a man had to protect himself in wide open space, duty not to be played with or wasted. Till the 70s, they stayed pretty true to that mission, sport, skill, history, and tradition, till two guys named Carter and Knox had a vision to do away with all that business. See, any control of a gun was too much. A slippery slope, they thought, maybe the cusp of a full confiscation of guns, so they mustn't put any rules up to disrupt what our forefathers trusted we'd understand justly, even after roughly 100-year cycle since them old pump rifles. But still, they'd be damned if they'd ever submit to a hypothetical tyrannical government. After all, they didn't trust the people running it, so they thought, let's just give them some money to lobby against legislation intended for ex-cons and mentally unstable men, and really anyone having laws they'd need to bend to get whatever weapon they wanted. Couldn't be stunted. Didn't even matter if they hunted or how many rounds per minute the gun did, because it's all green in the middle, sonny. Well, and then came old Moses himself, Charlton Heston, and a fella named LaPierre as the new vice president, and the politicking got even more aggressive. After all, they had to protect their investment. A lot of cash to be made in patriotism, so they swapped out militia with the word individual, preached it was every man's God-given will to be vigilant to the red, white, and blue. Never mind if there's maybe a loose cannon or two, or some loner decides that what he ought to do is take it out on some folks with a shiny and new unregulated AR-15. So shiny and clean, such a fine machine.
is when the news breaks, he'll just offer up a couple of thoughts and prayers, wait for some sales to double, blame it on the TV or the liberal judges or some video games if they gotta. Cause now's not the time to get soft after all, with so many enemies great and small. You'd surely better be quick on the draw. In fact, buy them all up if you wanna. They might be coming for your mama. Barack Hussein Obama. So let me just say, shooting's fun, I can dig it, but so's driving fast, that's why there's a speed limit, because otherwise, what's to stop someone from giving it gas as they go through a school zone? Speaking of schools, I'd prefer if I knew that my daughters could go there without bulletproof in their backpacks, that they could sit back in the cafeteria and snack real relaxed like, without having to worry about the attack of the incel with the holograph sight. And one more thing I just can't grapple with is how there's a 1.2 gun per capita. That means more than one gun for every single inhabitant, like all 300 million people. More than one gun for each of them. Now, I'm no mathematician, but that kind of division seems unreasonable. Because all that it takes is a couple of loose screws and a dose of some 24/7 cable news and a regular old case of the Monday blues, and boom, there goes a neighborhood. And thanks to guys like LaPierre and Knox, the sports club don't care about how good a shot you are or if there's maybe a red flag to spot to think maybe you just might not need one. But what's a school kid or two between them? The price of freedom. I can respect that you might have a family that you'd like to protect if things ever got gnarly, and I support that fully and wholeheartedly, but man, do we need the whole army? Because there we were in the year 2020 with the GOV'T acting funny, secret police in the streets, and not one of you seem to be reaching for your peace. I guess all that don't tread on me stuff and such is a talking point that you can use as a crutch, then I'd have to say that you just love guns so much. If that's the case, I get it, trust me. It's not enough to justify upwards of hundreds of thousands of deaths in this country. And how about the constitutional scholars that live and die by the words of our forefathers, but when the time comes, seemingly can't be bothered if peaceful protesters get shot up? As long as they're not us, the real patriotic desperados, sitting on our cold dead hands. So I'm guessing my point, to keep a short story long, somewhere the old NRA got it wrong. The original intent to keep our soldiers strong and prepared just went out the window. To cash in and become a lobbying arm for more and more guns, no matter the harm. But man, we're a long way from back at the farm, so we might need to rethink the system. I ain't saying I got the wisdom, just saying. If the mark was a deer for which they thought they needed some real military precision, I think they missed it. The Second Amendment is only one sentence, and the word regulated is hard to forget. But I guess LaPierre and old Moses C. Heston, Oliver North, and the whole damn rest of them couldn't care less if you pass any tests or have crimes to confess. They consider it best. Let them possess. Build the war chest. Make them all think that they're being the best they can be to suppress the hypothetical, tyrannical government of the U.S. of A. Because happiness is warm gum. Happiness is warm gum. Happiness is warm gum. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, brother.
Thank you. You know, if you watch these live streams without the sound and they do the closed captions, I wonder if anybody was doing that.
You got the work cut out for
them. Yeah. All right, how about some cigar box guitar? Yeah.
everyone's favorite portion of the show.
Because it's cool.
It is cool.
It's cool, man. See, you're not just some average middle-aged white guy. You're the middle-aged white dude with the cigar box, man. You gotta.
It's true.
You gotta take hold of whatever makes you unique. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm glad you brought that box.
Hell yeah.
Some sweet tooth. Step right up, get you while you can. Alligator hooker in the candle. Red light chugging like a malt can, bugging around a flame. Step right up, get a wild as eye. Anything you want under the big top. And that monkey with the soda pop, beating the drum all day. A thin slice, full play. Everybody speed day. Catch up with the quick bay. Hook, line, sinker. Hey, no need to think about it. Anything you want, you gotta bind at the spine of your gate. Gotta try to catch it with the shoulder tension deficit. No need to grab us on. Prove it. I cross reference it. Just hit them with the shine on the front. Now I make a sign. I had to worry about a win. Step right up. Get you while you can. Alligator hooker in the can. Red lights chugging like a malt can. Bugging around. Step right up, get a wild as I. Anything you want under the big time. Bang, bang, monkey with the soda pop. Beating the drum all day. Have to believe. Have to believe.
Is it all right if I ask Chris a few more questions before we go back to going crazy again? Just a few. So, Chris.
That was fun, by the way.
Yes, it was.
What is it you're trying to do with your music? Are you trying to enlighten? Are you trying to entertain?
Yeah.
What's your mission?
All of those things. I think what I like about any art is just sort of like when it opens up into some sort of portal where it's not necessarily telling you what to think or spelling things out for you, but just opening your mind into a space where you then can explore your own being. And that's sort of the meta new age description of it. But, I feel like by the act of seeing somebody get enraptured in art or a piece of art that was birthed out of an honest intention, I think that inspires indirectly anyone who comes in contact with it. And so that's what art's done for me. It's like by listening to certain music, reading certain books, looking at certain art, and then being able to like manifest that in my own way, it's into something inspirational. I think it's just this cycle. That's why art is so essential. It's not just, you know, a one night out where you're boogieing down. I mean, that's all great, but just what you take away from it and how you manifest that in your own life. So, if that makes sense, that's what I'm going for anyway.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. I was like, yeah. What? Yeah. What are you
trying to do, man?
Yeah, I like what you're trying to do there. what's your biggest challenge as a musician and as a creator?
Writing songs is never easy for me, you know. So just evolving as an artist and trusting myself might, you know, any artist. That's doing honest work would hopefully tell you that. Because it's when you write a new, it's like every time I sit down to write a song, it feels like I'm never gonna ever write another song again. I mean, you know that feeling where like you have a great show, and then it's the next day, and can you do it again? And just trusting yourself to put forth the right intention, and that's really all I can control. So, but that's the hardest to deal with, I guess, is when you're making a career out of art, since there's so much at stake, being able to keep the honest intention and to stay in the right place and still produce, you know, that's sort of the what I guess separates the men from the boys.
Yeah,
or women from the girls.
Yeah, from the doing it from the doing it.
Yeah, it's luckily it's still challenging and just totally mind-boggling to me every time I sit down and try to create new work, just where to start, where to go, and I hope it never stops challenging me. I mean, I think I've gotten better at the thing of trusting myself and trusting that if I just control what I can control and put forth the right emotions and intentions that hopefully good things will come out. But until it does, it's like until the bitter end of a record being completed or a song being completed, it's like I have nothing. Okay, I'm done. You know, like it's sort of the way it is. But
when you write a song like that last tune, Big Top, when you finish it, do you just know? Like, did you know? Like, you finished that song and you were like, yes.
This is
like, I did it. I fucking did it.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes. I knew that one would be like a fun banger to play live, and you know, it's a fun one. But yeah, there's some that surprised me that you know, you think is track 7 on the record, just that you needed another song, and it ends up being the one that lasts the longest. And you know, that's the beauty of it, though. Like we were talking about before, it's like time will take care of whether or not it's good. You know, and it's being able to put it out there and you know, hope that people get where you were coming from, and you know, so not always. Once in a while, it's like yeah, but not always.
Yeah. There's kind of like for me, there's almost like two levels where like I'll complete something and I'll be like, I think that this I think this is ready for public consumption, yeah. And I feel good about it. There's other times that I finish something and I'm just like psyched to have finished it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, totally.
And like I don't even know like what my bandmates are gonna think about it. They probably aren't even gonna like it.
Right.
Like I wrote a Christmas song the other day. Yeah. And I mean.
Yeah.
Even just like thinking about it makes me so happy. But I played it for my bandmates and they're kind of like.
Yeah.
I don't know what we could do with that. I'm like, no, it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man. I just finished making a record a couple months ago, and I went into a totally different. I was working with a producer, Brad Cook, and I just sort of stripped away all the past expectations that I'd always had going into records. I stripped away like the feeling of needing to check whatever boxes I needed to check for a record, and just tried to write songs that needed to be written in that moment. Half the record was written. Right in the week that I recorded them, and there was a couple that I was like, yeah, this is like I wrote it in the night before, brought it in and showed it to everybody, and it was like, yeah, let's do that. That's just as good as anything you've. So you know, it's
that's a good feeling, isn't it?
It is, and you know, yeah. So it's sometimes you know, and some it's all about getting out of your own way. You know what I mean? It's all about just like letting it happen, guiding it, you know, zoom in, zoom out, drive yourself crazy, repeat.
Yeah. I was reading, in interviews with you, the word love comes up a lot when you're talking about your band and collaborating and making music, you know, without sounding like Tina Turner. What's love got to do with it?
Yeah.
Like, how does that, what does that mean to you?
I mean, music... Collaborating with people, it's business, but it's so much more than that. And that's when you're lucky enough to find a situation where you get to play music with people that you actually love. It just makes the whole experience so much more worthwhile. And I think people that are listening to it can feel that. You know, you can tell when you see people who kind of hate each other on stage playing or going through the motions. But you know, I genuinely love the people in my band, and it's sort of a prerequisite. You know, to be in a band with people that you love, you're spending a lot of time with them, and it just, you know, all of that indirect, abstract energy, other than the music, it's all a part of coming together and being vulnerable together and creating together and trusting each other. So yeah, it's hugely important, hugely important. Like if I don't like somebody or somebody doesn't like me, even if you know they're the greatest musician in the world, like I'm okay. Just, you know, us going in our own lanes, you know. Not that I have any enemies out there, but I'm just saying that's just as important to me as how well somebody can play.
Yeah, and you can feel that right away.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some people I think are a little more sensitive to that.
Yeah, and I mean, I do love people who I wouldn't be in a band with because they're not good, but but I love them anyway. So I guess love works whether you're in a band or not.
it works in every way.
Every way.
It's all there is. All right, I call this the lightning round, but don't feel like, it's not like, you know, one word answers.
Okay.
You know, you can elaborate if you want. It's not like we've got a time limit or anything.
All right.
Speed round, lightning round. Ready?
Yeah.
What's something you learned from your father?
How good the Grateful Dead is.
Man, I wish my dad had taught me that. I had to find that out on my own. What's something fatherhood has taught you?
To be selfless.
Yep, that's the only way to do it. Why do you get up in the morning?
Because life is beautiful, and I have a wonderful family, and there's music to be made, and I love, you know, a family to take care of and feed.
Yeah.
I kind of have to.
What color is your front door?
We just moved. It's we painted it black.
You painted your own front door black?
Uh-huh.
Bold strategy.
It's a yellow house.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I got it now.
It's like black. We just moved, so I had to think about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you'd painted it yourself. Would you answer the question?
No, I didn't paint it myself. No, I did not. Yeah, I did not. Yeah.
What's the most important thing?
Oof. Lightning round question, huh?
I think it means is that my question is short. but the answer can be long.
Most important thing to me is my family.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing in life.
Just a couple more. What do you hope for?
I hope to keep playing music for a living and feed my family. That's really all I can ask for at this point. I'm 44. I don't think I'm going to be a pop star at this point. Probably not. Right?
You don't want that anyway.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you'll be fine. We'll take care of you.
Yeah. So
we'll keep listening to you.
I haven't had a day job in 20 years, and I play music for a living and support a family. So that's what I hope to keep doing for the rest of my life.
Is there anything that you're afraid of?
Not being able to play music for a living and having to go get a real job.
Okay, and I think I already know the answer to this. My final question, what is it that makes you happy?
I mean, there's so many things, but I hate to keep going back to it, but you know, when my family is taken care of, that it feels like, and you know, things are working, and there's a few bucks in the bank. I mean, really, I'm a simple guy. You know what I mean? At this point, that's really what I hope for. Fame and fortune would be nice, but I'll take that.
That's much more important. That's Chris Jacobs, everyone.
Next time when that I can never make it home again.
mama was a red bone. Mama was a red bone. Heaven, nerd. Oh, no, the night time runs through.
cold black slate and another nine to boot. Spend some down to Mexico, cross the river down the way of La Vida. Maybe pick up to Guadalajara, maybe in a day or two, maybe tomorrow. We're going down the highway soon, while I'm having out the Cajun moon. Sound the bell, so gonna waggle and roll out your red door. If Nation would to call my name, I'm the devil, old Jesse James. Sound the bell, so gonna waggle and roll out your red door. Roll out your red door. I'm a little Indian boy, ain't got no home. I'm a little Indian boy. I'm a little Indian boy, ain't got no home. Get up the walk and move it on down the road. Some call me church out center, some call me great gone saint. Call me anything, what did you want to call me? The devil, the Jesse Jane. Call me a church out center, call me a great gone saint. Call me anything, what did you want to call me? The devil, the Jesse Jane. Call me a church out center, call me a great gone saint. Call me anything, but if you want to call me the devil, Jesse James. Call me the devil, Jesse James. Call me the devil, Jesse James. Thank you.
O'Neill on the drums, everybody. Travis Book. I'm Chris Jacobs. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much for tuning in. We hope you have a good night. We'll see you soon. Be well to each other. Be kind. Keep that chin up.
This has been the Travis Book Happy Hour Podcast. Thanks for listening. Huge thanks to Chris Jacobs, Devin Neal, Thompson Guitar, Americana Vibes, and the Bluegrass Situation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe and leave a positive review. It really helps us out. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at the Travis Book Happy Hour and online at thetravisbookhappyhour.com. If you'd like to see me live, catch me on tour with the Infamous String Dusters or Tuesday evenings at 185 King Street in Brevard, North Carolina, where I host Travis Book and Friends, or episodes of the Travis Book Happy Hour.